for another episode of Garden Pod. My name is Amy Mush, and today I'm joined by our service learning leaders across the school. Hello, both of you. Can I have some introductions, please?
Hi. Hi, Amy. My name's Alan Archer. I'm a Year 5 teacher, and I'm the head of intercultural and service learning in primary school.
Hi, thank you for inviting me. I'm Tiana Rinjerovic. I'm an art teacher and also coordinator for service learning in secondary school.
And the two of you have been working together so that we have a service learning program that goes across a whole school. Al, as you said, primary, Tiana, you're up in secondary, but you work together a lot. And then we have other people involved as well. Shall we start with just talking about what service learning actually is? Who would like to start?
Well, I can just talk a little bit also about service learning as an idea and community service, because through a little research I've done, actually community service existed even in ancient times, in old Greece, where civic responsibility and moral development also it was integrated in education. And then with the reformation of education in 19th century, it was actually, let's say, reformers suggested that education should be more holistic and have more experiential and contact with the community.
Yeah.
And this is when the community service actually started as an idea. But service learning, as we know it today, started somewhere around civil rights movement, when people, specifically in America, realized that there is a need to interact more deeply and put it into an academic environment, understanding of students of what is happening around the world and around them, specifically within community. And then ever since it grew, it became really integrated in education of 19th century, and there was research that showed that service learning as such is very beneficial for not only community, but our students as they develop their academic understanding, and also they have this experiential experience,
yes,
let's say,
yeah,
where they can, whatever they learned within the classroom, experience outside of the classroom. So service learning is an academic approach to understanding community and then experiencing it outside of the classroom.
So it sounds like the idea of kind of community service, that goes back a very long way.
Yes.
Service learning is more recent.
Yes.
What's the difference between those two things? Are they the same?
To some extent, yes. Although there are distinctions. I think that, as we were saying before, service learning is community service.
Right.
But not all community service is service learning. Like we said, the analogy of the squares, all squares are rectangles,
mm-hmm,
but not all rectangles are squares. It's a similar idea with service learning and community service. Community service focuses on giving to the community. So it is, sometimes that might represent itself in our school in activities or projects such as food drives.
Yeah.
The Jeans for Jeans is a very big kind of community service event that we have. And often these events involve people in the community collecting something that they believe that another sort of part of the community need, and then donating or giving that to the community. Whilst in service learning, it's more academically focused, and the kind of the spotlight of the process is shone on the student and how the student engages and what they learn about. And when we talk about the academic learning in service learning, we're not necessarily talking about the kind of core subject learning. We're looking much more from a holistic perspective. So the learning is more social and emotional learning as much as it is any kind of project management or anything like that. So I think that that's an important distinction, is that in a service learning project, there is a learning for the student before the project, where they might sort of find out something about it, about what it is that they're looking into, and then they have time to reflect on how they feel about it, and then to engage with the community or the part of the community to find out and to actively communicate with them to find out what they want, and then to provide what they can, so to collaborate with them, and then to go away and reflect on the experience as a whole.
Yeah, so I think the community service bit will be very familiar to people, the idea of raising money, like harvest festivals, you know, all those sorts of things. But that distinction between service learning sounds a lot more, it's like looking at who is actually benefiting from it. It's much more of a two-way thing, whereas the community service is kind of a one-way. I mean, it might be beneficial to wear jeans on Jeans for Jeans Day, but it's very much a kind of collecting and giving to one group, whereas that service learning, there's kind of that mutual benefit. Tiana, should schools do both of those, or is one better than the other? Should we just be focusing our efforts in one?
I think it's important we do both of them. We shouldn't forget that community service entails as well volunteering. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also in our school is extracurricular activity, and I think it does still develop teamwork, leadership skills, empathy in our children, and it gives maybe opportunity for children also, once they learn something through service learning, to experience that outside. But as Al said, the other one is, let's say, deeper approach, and it gives students opportunity to reflect and try to solve problems. And I think also it helps them with retention, because community service, because once they learn in the classroom and then the experience, or if in the future they need to use some sort of example, they can recall it and also use it from their own experience that they experienced through community service. So I think that they are very working very well together. We should, and all the schools should keep both of them.
Yeah.
Unless we develop service learning, which has inside itself volunteering and all of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like wider.
Yeah. And we want our community to benefit, whether our students are benefiting or not. We do want to help our local community.
Yes.
So that implementation of service learning, it sounds like it's a lot more work, to be perfectly honest, because you said there's prep work, you're working with partners, they're coming back. There's a lot more organisation, it sounds like, rather than just say, you know, going out and collecting money.
Mm-hmm.
How do we actually go about doing that and trying to make that meaningful for students and an experience which is going to be genuine learning?
Mm-hmm. Well, in primary, our approach has been, first of all, to look at the existing topic units that are there. And so it's looking at how we can use service learning to enrich the existing curriculum. To build on it or to add something else in, to something that's already as deep and rich as a whole school curricula, it's going to be very hard to do and to do justice to. So it's all about taking what we've got already and sort of tweaking it and finding ways that we can enrich it. So part of that was talking to teachers, heads of year, heads of faculty about the kind of units that they do. And then thinking about which NGOs the school works with, or which connections or contacts people have outside that we might be able to engage with, and then reaching out to those NGOs and explaining what we are trying to do and how we want it to be collaborative, and of course to collaborate with any community group, they have to physically kind of engage as well. So it has to be a two-way process. So we're looking for organisations and community groups who are willing to come in and speak to our students and give our students an experience that makes them walk away feeling something, invoking that emotional response, and then also creating an opportunity for them to be able to spot an avenue in which they can support. So an example of one that we did in year six was with the Greater Action group with the Afghan women refugees, and the students had the opportunity to go to their workshop and to see how how these women earn a living in with their status and in their position. And it was a really inspiring experience. It was interesting actually hearing some of the feedback from the students who kind of said about how, you know, it's quite a small space and it was a little bit uncomfortable and it was a little bit hot. And you know, and when sort of discussing with the teachers and things, and when we talked about where we could go with that, and, oh, maybe they could come in to our school and to do it here, it was kind of the point was, no, that's their lived experience. So our kids have had an opportunity to share in that. And again, it's made them walk away thinking about something. And then they realise that because they do a lot of craft work and textile work, that what they need are textiles and materials. So the students could go away and then go and collect and find things to donate. So kind of at its most basic level, it might appear to be community service, but the point was that it was driven by the students in a response to a need that they identified from a collaborative communication with the Afghan ladies. And so there's an example of how we took an existing unit, which was around prejudice and discrimination and kind of focused on migrants and movements of people. And we got to enrich the experience for the students and give them a much deeper and more visceral understanding of what it means to be like either a displaced person or a refugee or a migrant in another country in the situation of those ladies. Mm-hmm. So that's how we can take what we've got and build upon it to try and make it exactly that, more meaningful for our students.
And it's so important if schools are looking at what they can do to improve their curriculum, that you're not kind of trying to take a model and put it in. You need to look at what have you already got and where can we incorporate things which are genuinely authentic and within our community, our groups, and how do they fit in what we've already talking about in the classroom, rather than kind of trying to kind of buy a model in or something else.
Mm-hmm.
Tiana, would you like to talk a little bit about in the secondary school, mm-hmm. and how does it kind of fit into our curriculum?
So with us, for example, I think we have quite developed community service, which we are constantly improving. What we need to tie it is to service learning. And now we have a lot of also challenges with that. First, in primary school, maybe I presume is easier because it's only one teacher. Now we are involving a lot of different teachers. Some subjects also find their own challenges because of the amount of curriculum they need to cover and different subjects that are more challenging. But so this year particularly, we tied to the global citizenship, which was for me personally quite a new term.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it, but I didn't really know what it clearly entails. And it was interesting to find out that actually service learning would be under the umbrella of this term, which mm-hmm. is quite wider. And it includes culture, diversity, natural and human disasters, looking at the poverty, nutrition, sustainability, and also identity, for example. And these are all interesting topics to cover in service learning. So now we are trying, each of us in our respective subjects, to somehow tie to curriculum that we are already organically doing, just like primary school, and find the venue and space. Of course, it's challenging also with the time. So we find we need to try pilot versions. For example, in art subjects in Key Stage 3, we are trying now to integrate more complexity of identity and make students more aware of cultural, gender identity, etc. And see that pilot, how does it really work? How much we're gonna try to measure within different departments, how which effect it has on students. And if we can then, like Aliu mentioned, connect it to different guests we might bring, different NGOs, or connect the future care week or something, find that connection, it would be really ideal.
Yeah, yeah. And I spoke on this podcast actually recently to our director of global citizenship about embedding that curriculum, because that's a way that as a school you can try and ensure that you are really building up those skills over the course of a student's education, and you're not just putting bits in here or there or individual teachers, but you're actually trying to make sure it's mapped out throughout and students go on this journey of improving their service learning skills.
And as you said, that it's very relevant to the community, to surrounding where we live. So it takes time, but I'm really optimistic that you can do it. I think it's really, really worth it.
Yeah.
So we need to put everyone on the board. It seems that there is a kind of a positive energy around it. So in a couple of years, hopefully, we're going to have a sealed good program.
Yeah, it's been a big focus. So just wrapping up, if there are other schools listening, teachers, who would like to have their own students be more involved in service learning, you mentioned already about developing kind of empathy and understanding and the things that students can learn from it. Do you have advice for schools, individual teachers? What kinds of things should they be looking out for? How do you go about actually implementing any of this?
I mean, I think one of the things that, like, from a primary perspective, and I mean, this is applicable all the way through school, is the framework and the change from, like, egocentrism to geocentrism. So the idea that, like, really early on, students can get involved in service learning. Because when we talk about service learning and community service, either way, we're serving the community, whether it's looking at it from a global perspective, or even if it's in EYC, their community might be their house. Understanding what their parents want, or, you know, going to tidy their bedrooms because they know that somebody else has to do it and they don't have time, so they're doing something for them. Like, the scope of the community can be as small as their household, or can be as wide as, you know, something that's national or international. Mm. So I think it's bearing in mind that you can start small and grow, kind of as you were saying, Tiana, making it relevant for that stage and building upon it, as you were saying, Amy, and mapping it out. It doesn't have to start huge. And I think also on that point, something that we found that maybe to some extent may feel a bit contrary to the approach that you feel that you might want to take, is that when you start to design a service learning program, that you, when you're communicating with NGOs that are already well established and have like strong links or procedures, you know, some of them even have like SOPs and things like that about the way that they operate, can be a useful place to start. Mm-hmm. Because while you may identify that the part of your community that needs the most help may not be that one, what I think you want, particularly when you're starting out, is you want success. And to make it successful, it helps if you've got an organisation or another community group that's well established that you can work with easily. And once you have positive results and you start to build a model or a process, then you can start to take that process and apply it to places where the organisation or group that you're working with isn't quite so well resourced. Mm. So you know which gaps you need to fill in to still make it successful. Being a service learning experience, the community you want to benefit from it, but you're also, the spotlight's on the student as well and the student's experience. And we found that the most positive experiences are the ones where the students go away feeling really proud of what they've done. So somewhere where you can get feedback. Recently, in our EYC, they did a unit with the SPCA. They worked with them, and the SPCA came in.
This is an animal charity.
That's right, yes. Sorry, yeah. The Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And they came in and they talked to the children about it. I think they might have even bought in some cats.
Yeah.
And then the students listened to what the organisation needed, what the cats needed and the animals in the shelters. They got little shoeboxes, filled them with things that they thought they would want, and they sent them off. And the real power in the whole process was when photos came back of the animals playing with these toys or sleeping in the beds, and the students could actually go, oh, that's the toy that I bought.
Yeah.
And so they can see the impact that they're having, and it's not putting money in an envelope in a classroom for jeans and then never knowing anything else about it.
Yeah.
That has its place and it does good for the for that community group, but there's no feedback.
Yeah.
And it's that feedback that creates that cycle of I'm going to engage again because that felt good when I saw the fruits of my labour.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And as you said at the start, with the maybe an NGO that's not so well resourced, if you have too many barriers, actually it's going to stop everything from happening because there'll be too many problems and you won't be able to make any progress at all. So start with something which is a bit easier to do and then small things. I love the kind of EYC examples as well, because it's about developing students' sense of being able to have a positive impact on others, whether that's their parents or a cat or anyone else.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you can really see it.
Mm.
Is there anything else either of you?
I just wanted to add on.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with everything and start small. But I think what for teacher advice would be just that they shouldn't also look at the instantaneous benefit that they expect. I mean, especially in our environment where we teach international children and quite privileged background, it's utmost importance and our obligation, knowing that most of them will become maybe politicians, lawmakers, leaders, that we need to prepare them to be good people, really, and thinking of society. Specifically to me, it became clear when I taught in Malawi, where that contrast was much bigger, and we knew that those kids will come back and disseminate what they know, and they will need to look after their own society and community. So I think that don't expect anything to happen suddenly as benefit, but we as teachers really need to know this is a long-term investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And if your students are getting to know their local community, then when they come back, they go away to university, most of our students, they go overseas to university, but the vast majority will come back and then
they will invest in a certain sense.
And I think, absolutely agree with you, Tiana, in that idea of long-term investments, it comes back to that idea of sustainability. And I think that's something that's important to having long-term investments, particularly with community groups who you're working with, is that if the projects are sustainable and can happen over time and we can keep going back and revisiting them, then it's going to be more beneficial to the community. And again, the idea of what we were talking about, community service and putting money in an envelope, that's the action on behalf of the student is literally that, a few seconds worth of physical action of taking the money from their bag, putting it in the envelope, as opposed to something like the SPCA, where the children see that happening, and now they know that at any point they can go and do that, and that it will make a difference. So they can keep revisiting, or it's something that they can go back to year after year. So every year that year group comes about, they can continue the work that the year group before did. We've been talking about things like composting, and which is a really interesting idea of how one year group could like make the compost and start the composting going, but they're probably not going to reap the rewards of seeing that develop. But the next year when they come in, they have that. So they might, we were talking about, you know, do you sell the compost? Do we use it to grow the food that we then send to the Lost Food Project so they can cook meals?
Yeah.
But then they also have to give a little bit back to the composting so that the year after it comes around. And so what you have is something that is sustainable over time. It is a long-term investment, not only in resources for ourselves and obviously in commitment from the Lost Food Project who are going to benefit from it, but also the fact that every group of students who comes through get to have a positive experience.
I actually wanted to say, I was last week I had a student that came to visit me from my previous school. She's now an adult and she's traveling around. And I was really ashamed because she was like, oh, you're using plastic bags while you are buying lemon. So she went and bought me little bags, and then she asked me, how do I recycle? And you just face different generation. And I'm leader. Kind of, I was quite ashamed and saw that gap. And I was extremely proud because we were teachers, you know, she's a product of us in some sense, whatever we were teaching her. So I guess that's what we want, you know, to have this new generation of better humans than we are.
Yeah, leading the way and looking after our world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anything else either of you would like to add? I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Really enjoyed speaking to you both.